All right, good evening. Is this on?
Hello, hello.
I believe we have a quorum, so we'll go ahead and call the meeting to order at 6:05. Welcome to tonight's meeting of the Northern Regional Advisory Council. My name is John Cabot, and I serve as the chair for the Northern RAC, and I represent the non-consumptive user from Hooper. I'd like to go ahead and ask the council to go ahead and introduce themselves, and we'll start over here with Kevin.
Kevin McLeod, member at large, West Haven.
Matt Preston, the Bureau of Land Management, field manager for the Salt Lake Field Office.
Justin Oliver, at large, West Haven, Utah.
Craig Van Tassel, sportsman representative from Camas.
Russ Lawrence, at large, and from Ogden.
And Justin Dolan, I'm the regional supervisor, and I serve as the executive secretary, and I'm a non-voting member.
Yes, please speak into the microphone. Well, they're not, but they're recording.
Oh, okay.
So,
gotcha.
Yes. They're sort of working. Everybody can hear us, right?
Yeah,
yeah. All right, so I'd like to welcome Byron Bateman to the meeting tonight. He's our Wildlife Board representative. Please join me, if you would, in turning off your electronic devices or turning the ringers off so that we can have an uninterrupted meeting tonight. The purpose of the Regional Advisory Council is to gather input from the public concerning wildlife management, policy, rules, and regulations. The council then makes recommendations to the Wildlife Board. Wildlife Board considers those recommendations from the five regional advisory councils and sets the policy for all protected species in Utah. This meeting will be recorded tonight for the transcriptions of the minutes. The audio recording and minutes will be available on the DWR website. So when you are speaking, please use a microphone. Speakers should state their name and, if they wish, where they're from. Please go ahead and take a look, Rack, at the agenda for tonight's meeting. And if there's no objection, we will approve the minutes or approve the agenda for tonight's meeting. There being no objection, the agenda for tonight's meeting is approved. The next business in order is approval of the minutes from the previous meeting. Are there any corrections to the minutes? Okay, seeing none, the minutes are approved as circulated. The next business in order is the Wildlife Board update, and Justin will provide the report.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just go through what the Wildlife Board passed at the most recent board meeting for the fur barrel rule amendments. The board passed that those rule amendments unanimously with very little discussion. The bobcat management plan, the board also passed that plan, and that passed unanimously. Fur bearer and bobcat harvest recommendations also passed unanimously by the board. And then cougar recommendations were a little bit more drawn out. We had a lot of discussion amongst the audience with the cougar recommendations. But in the end, the board made two changes to the division's recommendations. They made a change to increase the fish lake from 12 to 16, from 12 permits to 16 permits, and the boulder from 11 to 14. And that passed 5-4 and 1 against. And the next motion was to increase the manti from 5 permits to 8 permits, and go to a limited entry hunt structure, and that passed 4-5-4 and 1 against. And then the balance of the balance of the recommendation was passed unanimously. And then on to our proposed fee schedule. Just as a little bit of background, our RAC recommended a reduction in the fee schedule for youth turkey and mitigation cow elk tags. The central region recommended an additional reduction in the fee for youth turkey tags. And then the other three racks recommended going with the division's recommendation. And so there was a little bit of discussion amongst the board on this, but in the end, they accepted the division's recommendation for the fee schedule adjustments as presented, and that passed unanimously. There was one action item that came out of the board on the youth turkey, and that action item was to explore youth turkey hunting at the front end of the season and evaluate the value of limited entry hunts, whether or not they're still necessary versus just straight over-the-counter permit system. So that'll be an action log item that our agency will be looking at and hopefully reporting on at the Upland Game meetings coming up. So that's all I have unless there's questions.
Questions for Justin?
Okay. The next business in order is the regional update.
Okay, let me briefly just go over what's going on in our region. I'll just go through each one of the sections. In our law enforcement section right now, they are fully staffed, and all our officers are in their respective districts. So first time in a long time we've had a fully staffed law enforcement section, which is great. They did report that the archery hunt right now is fairly slow, probably due to the heat. There's a few archers out there, but not many. In our outreach section, the Waterfowl Youth Fair is this Saturday at Farmington Bay Waterfowl Management Area. It's a great event, so if you have a young kid that wants to get into waterfowl hunting, I'd encourage you to bring them out and join that Waterfowl Youth Fair. And then our outreach section will be conducting interviews for the Wildlife Recreation Specialist position that Clint Brunson vacated recently. In our wildlife section, Randall McBride is our new wildlife specialist, and he will be helping with depredation, nuisance, and our predator management programs. And then depredation right now is still ongoing in our cache unit. And over in Rich County, we have a couple of hotspot areas. It's been really so dry that the elk continue to come down into the alfalfa and cause problems to landowners. The all our elk management plans are in Salt Lake and under review in the main office. And the biologists are just finishing up their pronghorn classifications. In our Great Salt Lake Ecosystem Program, Chad Cranny was selected as our new assistant manager, and he will also serve the role as public shooting grounds, Salt Creek, and Locomotive Springs manager. So he'll assist John Luft as the program manager for Great Salt Lake Ecosystem, and then also be the manager at public shooting grounds, Salt Creek, and Locomotive. The waterfowl guys have finished up their frag spring for the year, and they covered all the WMAs on the Great Salt Lake, and it looks like making good progress on that Phragmites front. The waterfowl guys also banded a little over 1,200 ducks this year. They had a quota of 500 cinnamon teal. There's a flyway study going on cinnamon teal to look at how those birds are surviving over the course of annual survival and just long-term survival. So they were able to almost meet that quota. I think they got 420 cinnamon teal. And then all 1,200 ducks were also tested for the avian flu. And to my knowledge, nothing came back positive. So that's good news. In our habitat section, they're assessing rehab opportunities on several fires that occurred here in the region throughout the summer. The Peplin fire out in West Box Elder, the Broadmouth fire near Tremonton, the big one on that private land just west of Tremonton, Box Canyon above Smith and Morehouse. I think the plan there is just to allow that to continue to burn. It's not causing any problems at this time. And then the Peterson fire on the cache, and, of course, Antelope Island, that about three-quarters of the island burned this summer. And they're looking at opportunities to rehab those areas with using some of the seed out of our Ephraim station. In our aquatic section, they'll be interviewing for the native aquatic biologist position, and that'll be replacing Phil Tuttle, who was our native biologist lead, and he promoted to our southern region as the outreach manager. And then leash chub monitoring is occurring. This fish is currently only found in Utah, and it's a fish that we keep a close watch on. And the guys reported that we actually tried to establish a couple refuge populations, but were uncertain as to whether or not they were reproducing. And they did find viable offspring this year at a couple of springs and at Locomotive Springs. So that's good news for that species. And then right now fishing at Willard is really good for wipers, and the high Uinta lakes continue to fish well, and it's nice and cool up there. So get out and do a little bit of fishing. That's all I have unless there's questions.
Any questions for Justin? Okay, we have a fairly short agenda for tonight, but since there are some folks in the audience, I'll go ahead and go through our standard operating procedure. The meeting will proceed as follows. A representative from the division will make a presentation on the agenda item, and then we'll move and have questions from the public on the presentations. That is a time for questions only. Next, we will have questions from the council on the presentation, and then move back to the public on any comments you may have regarding that presentation. Persons that are representing themselves are limited to 3 minutes. If you represent a group, you'll be allowed to have 5 minutes on your comment period. And again, I'd remind you to speak into the microphone. We'd ask that if you do have a comment, that you go ahead and fill out a comment card for us and turn that in so that we have a record of the comment. Next, the council will then comment on the agenda item and make any motions recommending action by the Wildlife Board on that particular agenda item. Okay, so we'll go ahead and start the presentation on the fishing guidebook and rule R657-13. And we have another RAC member come in, so John, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself.
John Wall from Riverdale, public at large.
Okay, thanks.
My name is Randy Offlinger, and I'm the new Cold Water Sport Fish Coordinator for the Division of Wildlife. I'm requesting Paul Bird, who retired earlier this year. Craig Walker, our new Warm Water Sport Fish Coordinator, unfortunately couldn't make it tonight, but we do have Paul Thompson in the back, who's the Regional Aquatic Manager, and he's available to answer any specific questions we have about the fisheries issues here in the area. Okay, so there's a couple parts to what I'm going to talk about tonight. The first part, I'm actually going to start with some just information-only items. And then from there, I'm going to move into the proposed regulation changes that we have for the upcoming guidebook that we're going to release this winter. As I'm talking about those proposed regulation changes, I'm going to intertwine into that the results of an angler survey that we did this spring that provides us some input on, I guess, what the anglers are thinking, and it helps guide some of the regulation changes that we're proposing. So the first is the information item I'm going to point out is with the fishing guidebook, we're actually going to go to a two-year release cycle for the guidebook. So the upcoming guidebook that we're going to put out is going to be valid for both 2017 and 2018, which means we're not going to update our guidebook again until 2019. And it turns out there's a couple reasons why we're going to do that. The first one is it just helps the public out a little bit. One thing we acknowledge is as we change fishing regulations, sometimes they affect certain waters, and that's sometimes difficult for anglers just to follow frequent rule changes. So we just want to simplify things, put out rule changes a little bit less frequently, just to make it easier to track for anglers. Another reason why we're going this two-year release cycle is us as biologists, as we come up with regulations, we want to make sure that we have all the information possible, whether it's support from the public or just biological support behind the regulations that we're proposing. And this two-year release cycle just gives us a little bit more time to consider what we're proposing so we can come up with informed decisions on any regulation changes we propose. The release cycle for our guidebook is going to be in sync with Arizona, and hopefully it's going to be in sync with Wyoming as well. And that's going to be very helpful for anglers at Lake Powell and Flaming Gorge, which are water bodies that straddle those two states. And what that's going to do for those anglers is it's just going to, I guess, know, because there's two states managing to reduce the frequency of anglers that use those waters and counter regulation changes. And again, it just simplifies things and makes it a little easier for anglers. The next thing is with tiger muskie. Right now we're in the process of researching just a suite of options of different methods for regulating tiger muskie harvest, and we're going to put some more work into this and some more research. And it's very likely that when we release a new guidebook in 2019, there's probably going to be some changes in how to regulate tiger muskie harvest within the state. Next off, there's two new management plans that we released in the last year. The first one's for Flaming Gorge, and we also have one for Jordan Mel Reservoir. I'm just going to run through these very quickly and kind of summarize what we put out in these management plans for each of these water bodies. So first off, for Flaming Gorge, our management objectives for Flaming Gorge are, first off, for rainbow trout, we want to, in our gill nets that we set every year, to collect rainbow trout at a rate of at least 0.35 fish per hour in those nets. Also at Flaming Gorge, we want to try to manage Flaming Gorge as a trophy lake trout fishery. So we're hoping that our exploratory nets, which we use to monitor the lake trout population, we collect at least 1.5 fish that are greater than 28 inches in length every hour in those nets. Another thing at Flaming Gorge is there's an established burbot population. Those fish were illegally introduced into that water. And we want to keep the burbot population in check and keep it from expanding. So we're hoping that our gill nets to catch burbot at a rate of less than one fish per hour. The next thing is Flaming Gorge is the major kokanee salmon fishery in the state. We want to make sure we have at least 600,000 kokanee in that water that are between 0 and 2 years of age. And finally, we want to prevent invasive species introduction into that reservoir. So now for Jordanelle, our objectives of Jordanelle are, first off, we want to enrich trophy angling opportunities in that water. We've kind of worked towards accomplishing that in the last year by introducing both viper and tiger muskie into that fishery, so that provides anglers some opportunities to catch some larger fish than they have traditionally within Jordanelle. But we also want to promote Jordanelle as a family-friendly fishery, which obviously Jordanelle being so close to Salt Lake City, it's a great place for families to go if they just want to go fishing for an afternoon. We really want to promote that and make sure we manage it such that it's a great place for people to go and get hooked on fishing. Now, on top of that, because of Jordanelle's proximity to Salt Lake, there's just a lot of boaters that use Jordanelle. So we want to make sure that we have a quality recreational experience for the recreational boaters, so the personal watercraft users, water skiers, et cetera, and the boat anglers on that water. We also want to manage Jordanelle's fishery for compatibility with native species management. And we also want to manage Jordanelle's destination fishery. So we want to try to make it a place where people really want to go to catch good fish in the Salt Lake area. And then finally, we want to make sure that no new species are either illegally introduced in the Jordanelle or moved out of the reservoir. Okay, so I'm going to switch gears a little bit, and I'm going to talk now about more of the action items as part of tonight's agenda. So I'm actually going to talk about the proposed regulation changes. And as I talk about those proposed regulation changes, I'm going to intertwine into that the results of an angler survey that we did. So for starters, I'm going to talk about that regulation survey just a little bit. This regulation survey is something the Division of Wildlife does fairly regularly, usually once a year. And it's an online survey that we put out to our anglers. And what we do is we use that survey to gauge basically the popularity of regulation changes among anglers within the state. The survey itself is distributed basically through social media. So we provided a link for the survey, and we put it out through press releases, social media, angling groups, etc., and encourage people to respond to the survey. We got a pretty good response to the survey. I'll go into the specific numbers of respondents for particular questions as I get into the survey a little bit more. But the survey this year ran from May 11th through June 23rd, and we know that on average about 22% of people respond to our surveys. And as I mentioned earlier, what the survey does is it provides us input on just regulation changes that we're proposing, just to gauge the public perception of those regulations. And also, the survey provides us some input, some open-ended questions that help kind of help us gauge public interest in other issues. So it helps us gear future regulation changes because we know or have a better idea of what the public's looking for. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go into the proposed regulation changes. I'm going to break this down by starting off by talking about the statewide changes that we're proposing, and then I'm going to break it down by region. So I'm going to start with the statewide changes that we're proposing. There's actually only one. So what we did in our angler survey this year is we asked anglers if they would support the use of horn as bait here in Utah. We had 3,210 people respond to that question, and 70% of them came back and told us they would support us allowing the use of horn as bait here in Utah, whereas the remaining 30% said they wouldn't be supportive of that regulation change. Now, what really prompts this regulation change is it turns out that if you look nationwide, almost every state in the country allows anglers to use corn. And Utah is really an exception to that rule across the country. So what I'm showing here is obviously a map of the western part of the United States. All the grayish blue shaded states are states that allow anglers to use corn. And there's only one white state, and that state's Utah, which means Utah is the only state here in the west that doesn't allow anglers to use corn to fish. So what we see from the results of the angler survey is there is a really high demand among anglers in the state for the use of corn. I think it's pretty easy to see why anglers, you know, would want to use corn as bait, and really because corn is inexpensive, it's easy to obtain, you just pick it up at a grocery store, and it's really easy to use. Now, it turns out that here in Utah, there was a point of time that corn was legal as a bait, but it was made illegal because there were some concerns associated with chumming with corn and also excess litter associated with corn. Now, it turns out that chumming and littering are both illegal already here in the state of Utah. So because of that demand and the fact that we already have regulations in place preventing chumming and littering from occurring, we're actually open to the idea of basically allowing people on a trial basis to use corn as a bait here in the state of Utah. So we're basically proposing a pilot study where for the next 2 years, what we're going to do is we're going to allow a certain select group of waters in the state to be open to corn for use as bait. And we're just going to watch those waters and see if chumming and littering become issues on those waters. The waters that we selected are Kokanee salmon waters and carp waters in the state. And the reason why we selected those two species is because those are species that are frequently targeted using corn. And what we're going to do is we're going to work with our law enforcement officials, and we're just going to ask them basically to keep track of the number of citations they provide for littering and chumming at these water bodies. And we're just going to compare the citations before the regulation change and after the regulation change, and we'll just see if we see an increase in chumming littering occur as a result of this regulation change. What our plan is this is a 2-year pilot study. We're going to watch it for 2 years, and after 2 years, we're going to decide how to move on from there, whether we expand the use of corn to more waters in the state, or we pull that regulation back and no longer allow corn to be used. So it's all going to be based off of basically the number of violations that we see with chumming and littering at these waters. So the waters we're proposing this regulation change for are Cutler Reservoir, Deer Creek Reservoir, Electric Lake, Fish Lake, Flaming Gorge Reservoir, Lake Powell, State Line Reservoir, and Utah Lake. Okay, so now I'm going to start talking about specific regions and regulation changes that we have within those regions. So I'm going to start with a few regulation changes that we're proposing for the Northeast region. The first one is for the use of burbot as cut bait at Flaming Gorge Reservoir. So we asked that to anglers. We had 3,699 of them respond to the survey question, and 72% of them came back and said they'd be supportive of us allowing burbot to be used as cut bait at Flaming Gorge. 7% said they wouldn't be supportive, and 21% basically said they had no preference to whether or not we allowed burbot as cut bait or didn't allow burbot as cut bait at Flaming Gorge. Now, in a related question, what we asked anglers is whether they'd be supportive of the use of perch parts as legal bait at both Big Sandwash and Red Creek reservoirs. For this question, we had 3,704 people respond to the question. 65% of them came back and said they would be supportive of us allowing perch parts to use as bait at those two reservoirs. 9% said no, and 26% said they were just indifferent on whether or not we allowed perch parts to use as bait at those two water bodies. So based on the results of those two survey questions, what we're proposing is to add burbot to the list of available cut baits for anglers at Flaming Gorge Reservoir, and to add yellow perch parts and eyes to the available baits at both Big Sand Wash and Red Fleet reservoirs. Now also in the Northeast region, we asked anglers a question whether they would support a regulation change at Brough Reservoir, allowing a standard statewide limit of 4 trout at any legal bait to be used at that water body. Right now, at Brough Reservoir, we're trying to manage it as a trophy fishery. We only allow the harvest of one fish that's greater than 22 inches in length, and only artificial flies and lures could be used. Turns out the Brough isn't really operating as a trophy fishery, and anglers just aren't able to harvest fish. So that's why we're proposing to drop the regulation to the standard statewide limit at that water body. We had 3,698 people respond to the question. 72% of them were supportive of us changing the regulation of Brough Reservoir to the standard statewide limit of 4 fish in any legal bait at that water body. 6% of them came back and said they no, they didn't support that regulation change. And 22% of them said they were indifferent on whether or not we changed the regulation or not at Brock Reservoir. So based on that, we're proposing to change the regulation of Brock Reservoir to a 4-trout possession limit with all legal baits being permitted on that water body. Okay, so now I'm going to talk about the southern region and the proposed regulations we have for that region. First one is on Donkey Lake on the Boulder Mountains, and we asked anglers if they would support us changing the brook trout limit from a 4-fish limit to a 16-fish limit on that water body. And the reason we're supporting or proposing this regulation change is because Donkey Lake has a very dense brook trout population, and there's too many fish competing with one another, and the growth of the fish is suffering as a result. So we're trying to promote harvest on that water body to have anglers thin the population a little bit and promote the growth of the fish so we have larger brook trout in Donkey Lake. So we had 3,700 people respond to this question. 76% of them said they would support the regulation change, so increasing the limit on brook trout to 16 fish at Donkey Lake. 5% said no, and 19% said they didn't care whether or not we changed the regulation at Donkey or not. Now, also in the southern region, we have 3 lakes on the Monroe Mountains that experience very frequent winter kills of stock trout. And anglers actually came to us and they asked for an opportunity to harvest more of those fish before winter kill happens each year. So what we asked anglers is they would support us changing the rainbow trout limit from 4 fish to 8 fish on these 3 lakes between August 15th and December 31st of each year. So the idea here is we're increasing the limit toward the end of the year to give anglers an opportunity to harvest more fish and just get them out of that water body before winter kill happens. So we had 3,483 people respond to this question. The 3 lakes that we surveyed were Big Lake, Deep Lake, and Annabella Lake. And we gave anglers the option of saying, yes, they would support us increasing the possession limit to 8 fish at the tail end of each year. No, they wouldn't be supportive, or they're indifferent of whether or not we change the regulation on those 3 lakes. So the 3 lakes that we talked about were Annabella Lake, Deep Lake, and Big Lake. So I'm showing them there where Annabella is the top, Deep Lake's the middle, and Big Lake's the bottom. The scale along the bottom of the graph is just the number of people who gave a particular response to the question. So the blue bars represent people who said yes, they would support the regulation change, so increasing the possession limit to 8 fish between August 15th and December 31st of each year. The orangish-yellow bars represent people saying no, they don't support the regulation change. And the red bars represent people that had no preference in whether or not we changed the regulation. And what we found is for all 3 lakes, an overwhelming majority of people were supportive of the regulation change. So given those survey results, what we're proposing is on Donkey Lake to increase the possession limit on brook trout to 16 fish. And then on those 3 lakes we talked about on the last slide, so Big Lake, Deep Lake, and Annabella Lake, we're looking at changing the possession limit for trout to 8 fish between August 15th and December 31st of each year. Okay, so now I'm going to talk about our proposed changes for the northern region. The first one is we want to remove a seasonal closure for Cold Springs Lake, which is also known as Honeybill Pond. Right now, that water body is closed between January 1st and right before Memorial Day each year, so we're proposing to change that and allow it to be open to anglers year-round. We also want to add a new community fishery, so there's a new pond being built at Smith Family Park in Far West, right next to Smith and Edwards, and we're just proposing to add that to the community fishing waters in the state. And then the last region I'm going to talk about is the central region. We don't have any proposed regulation changes for the south or southeastern region this year, so the last one is the central region that I'm going to talk about. And we're going to start with some regulation changes on Jordanelle Reservoir that we're proposing. And the first one is for bass in the reservoir. We're proposing a 6-fish limit with no size restrictions of that reservoir. Right now, Jordanelle has a 6-fish limit, but only one of those fish can be greater than 12 inches. So that's the existing regulation. The problem we have with Jordanelle right now is the majority of bass in that reservoir are very small. A lot of them are maybe 8 to 10 inches in length. So it's not really functioning as a trophy bass fishery, and very few people are able to harvest fish greater than 12 inches just because there aren't very many fish out there that size. So we posed to anglers whether or not they'd be supportive of us imposing a 6-fish limit with no size restrictions at Jordanelle. We had 3,705 people respond to the question. 61% of them came back and said they would be supportive of us implementing that regulation. 11% said no, and 28% said they were indifferent whether or not they changed the smallmouth or the bass regulation on Jordanelle Reservoir. So given that, we're proposing actually two regulation changes at Jordanelle Reservoir. The first one is we want to go forward and we want to propose a 6-fish smallmouth bass limit with no size restrictions at the reservoir. Now, if you go back earlier in my presentation, I talked a little bit about a new Jordanelle management plan that we put in place. This limit helps us address some of those things we put in the management plan, so it's going to help us enrich trophy angling opportunities in the reservoir, help us manage Jordanelle as a destination fishery, and it also helps us ensure that no new species are illegally moved into or out of Jordanelle Reservoir. So that's some of the rationale behind this as well. Improve angling opportunities and help us address our management plan at Jordanelle. The second regulation change is we want to remove fillet restrictions for smallmouth at Jordanelle. And again, if you go back to our management plan, that's going to help us promote a family fishery at that water body and help ensure a quality recreational experience for all kinds of boaters and anglers who use that water body. Next off, in the central region, we want to extend the catch and kill regulation that we have for Northern Pike, which currently is in place for just Utah Lake itself. We want to move it into the tributaries of Utah Lake as well. And then finally, we want to add Riverfront Pond, which is a new fishery, to the list of community fishing waters for the central region. So that's really it for proposed regulation changes, and I really just kind of want to wrap this up with a few more results from our angler survey. So what I'm showing here, well, I guess I should back up. We gave anglers, as part of the regulation survey, an opportunity to provide just their feedback to us in terms of an open-ended question where they could write whatever was on their mind. What we did is we went through everybody's responses and we categorized them, kind of come up with, you know, specific groups of responses that people were providing us. And what we did is we ended up with about 125 different kinds of responses. What I'm showing up here are actually the top 10 responses that we got back from people. So I'm showing those responses across the bottom, and our scale on the y-axis, or the vertical axis, is just the percentage of people who had that particular comment for us. So the most common comment that came back to us from about 17% of anglers is they just said they thought we did a good job and encouraged us to do good or keep doing what we've been doing. About 15% of anglers want us to increase trout limits within the state. Right around 12% of anglers want us to improve bass management within the state. About 10% of us wanted to increase the enforcement of regulations that we have on our waters currently. Another about 10% of them wanted us to impose more fly and lure-only regulations within the state. Right around 8% of them wanted us to increase species diversity within the state. Another about 8% wanted us to increase private water access. Right around maybe 6 or 7% wanted us to remove slot limits within the state. Another about 6% wanted us to improve community fisheries, and another 6% wanted us to fix Schofield Reservoir. So the idea here is this kind of gives us an idea of what anglers are thinking, and as we come up with future regulation changes here in 2 years from now, we're probably going to gear some of our regulation changes to addressing some of these issues that showed up here as part of the survey. So that's actually all I have. I just want to thank everybody for their time. And one thing I want to point out is the fish of Utah are actually owned by the people of Utah. And what we do as biologists is we try to manage fisheries for the benefit of anglers in the state. So what we try doing is we try listening to the feedback of anglers and use that and incorporate it into any regulation changes and how we manage our fisheries within the state. So we certainly encourage the public to share any feedback they have with us. And there are several ways of doing that. First one is you could speak to your regional managers. Another one is come to RAC meetings like tonight. Present your ideas. Also, we have various electronic ways you can provide feedback to us, whether it's through email, or there's actually a web-based survey tool on that email address at the bottom. And then finally, you can just mail us a letter at the address we have there. So that's actually all I have, and I'll thank you for your time tonight.
Great. Thank you, Randy. Before we move to questions from the public, another RAC member joined us, Dr. Clark. Would you mind introducing yourself?
Matt Clark. I'm from Ogden, at large.
Okay, do we have any questions from the public regarding the presentation?
Yes.
Yes, Randy, first of all, congratulations on your new position in the department. A question for you. Was there any discussion on the putting Strawberry as a 3-day permission limit?
Yes, there was some discussion of that. Where we stand on that right now is that we feel that the anglers in the group of Strawberry Reservoir are still a little bit uncomfortable with that regulation change. So we're going to probably spend some time over the next year or 2 years just working with them a little bit more and trying to fill out their I guess, opinion on that regulation.
What was the result on the survey? I believe the survey said that the majority of people wanted it.
I'll have to admit the majority of people did want it. We still have to work with the anchor groups a little bit more to get them on board.
Any other questions from the public? Okay, we'll move to the RAC. Questions from the RAC on the presentation.
Yeah, I got one. So on Donkey Lake on the Boulder, you know, if you increase the take to 16, how do you encourage people to keep a fish, you know, that's smaller and so forth? You know, I just give an example of our family going up to the Uintas this past summer. It was fantastic fishing, but we only kept 3 fish because that's what we decided to eat. How do you educate people that it's a benefit for them, you know, that they should keep fish?
Yeah, that's certainly a tough issue. You know, what we're hoping for by expanding that limit is that more people will keep more fish to help grow that population. But you're right, you know, they're small fish. You know, a big part of it, I think, is just trying to put out that we are making a regulation change just so people understand why we're doing it and providing a little bit more education to the public. And working with user groups and things like that, encourage them to keep those fish, even if they are 6 inches in length or something that's not necessarily desirable.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the RAC? Yeah, Craig.
Yeah, Randy, on the littering problem with corn, how does that differ from any other type of bait? I didn't quite understand that.
Apparently, at one point in time, it was a significant problem and a greater problem other kinds of bait. You know, you could potentially leave any kind of litter out, whether it's, you know, soda cans or, you know, worm containers, etc. So that's a big part of what we're doing. You know, we're not sure if it's going to be worse than other baits or not. We're just trying to evaluate that, but we acknowledge there is a concern out there among some anglers that there could be litter issues.
Justin?
Randy, is there a, I just remember hearing the, when they stopped using corn, and I don't know if this was just a myth or there was a problem with the fish digesting corn, or is there any kind of fact, any of that there is a problem with? What was the reason that they did stop?
There's new science out there saying that, yes, corn is terribly digestible by fish, but also nutritionally it doesn't harm the fish. And that's sort of the latest. You know, I think at the time there were some concerns that it was harming fish by them ingesting too much corn, but science today suggests that that's really not a problem if they address it.
Okay. Now we'll move to comments from the public, and I have 2 comment cards. Guy Perkins. Thank you. Ken Strong? Strong? Yeah.
Ken Strong, representing Portsmouth Wildlife Regulation We, as an organization, accept the proposal as the division has given, with the exception, 2 exceptions. One is 2 years ago, the Wildlife Board. To look at putting strawberry into a two-day position. Currently, the added planning boards are the only two that are not. Planning boards, Wyoming will not go with that right now on planning boards. But strawberry is the only Utah body of water that does not have it. And it creates a problem with the sportsmen because they don't understand. They just think it's statewide. So I would like you to think about bringing in the two profession rule back in. We need to do it, and the Wildlife Board did recommend to do that 2 years ago. Second of all, on corn, kokanee are zooplankton eaters. They do not feed on corn. Now, kokanee, put a squid behind the Dodger, you throw the fist that kokanee off and he hits it out of anger. Corn really doesn't affect kokanee, other than it's yellow and it might be something that they can see on the end of the hook behind the squid. Because people can put things on it. What we'd like to see done on that is maybe have three bodies of water instead of the eight listed. On the two-year plan, one of them being Flaming Gorge because Wyoming does allow it, one of them being Lake Powell because Arizona allows it, and the third one to be Utah Lake because the carp anglers wanted it, and you don't find a better body of water for carp than Utah Lake. Other than that, we accept the rest of it.
Thank you. I don't have any other cards from the public. Any other comments from the public? Okay, seeing none, moving to the RAC comments and or motions.
I just got a comment. If that is something that the Wildlife Board directed, as far as this, sorry, this question's for Randy. If that's something the Wildlife Board recommended, it was overwhelming, it sounds like, on your survey, just because a few anglers at strawberry, I mean, it sounds like you're going with everything else that the survey recommended. Why not that one? It seems to me like, you know, if you're going to pick and choose, I mean, I don't see anybody here representing strawberry, you know. Maybe they will at the Wildlife Board meeting, but sounds like that's what the public supports. Why not do it?
I see your concern, obviously. What we do have at strawberry is a very global fishery, and that is the most fishery in the state. We really are working hard at moving forward with that regulation change, and actually, even though we're going to see your guidebook, there is a pretty strong chance that we're going to make a change here in the next time here to allow.
I don't fish, but I mean, it looks like 3,000 people that took the survey probably fish at strawberry. So, their recommendation or their what they want sounds like it should be.
Yeah, but one thing we do need acknowledge in the survey is, you know, you have a group of people who don't necessarily use all the water body questions to fill out the blanks on the survey, regardless. So, I'm thinking even though we had 3,000 people. Probably the actual core group of people who use strawberry is probably a little bit less than that. So there is a very vocal minority of people. And we need those people to be on board with any changes that we make in the suggestions and there's other regulation changes, management changes, et cetera, that we might make at strawberry reservoir. So for us, we feel like spending an extra 6 months.
Just seems like you're managing individual reservoirs for, you know, political more than biological. So,
any other comments, Kevin, and then Justin?
My question would be: what is there a negative impact on the fishery if you do go to a 2 day limit? Is that the reason that you don't want to do it? Is it going to affect the number of fish in the fishery, or is it just simply a political kind of a concern?
submit, it probably is primarily political at this point in time. Biologically, we don't think this is something I know it seems like a political move, but it really is. Very, very opposed to this. And, you know, for us, like I said, I'm taking a little extra time to consider this. I think we'll take political dividends through. And one thing about this is we almost guarantee our proposal is going to be, you don't know if you're off, something like that. But this is coming out of the pipeline.
Justin.
Is there, with the one-day limit possession and the rest of the state being two, has there been numerous citations? What is the, does it keep the division quiet, or the law enforcement busy there? Do we have a lot of people that unknowingly or, you know?
We definitely have a few people unknowingly. I guess I personally don't know the impact on law enforcement about that. But I don't think it's widespread, but we do know it.
Can one of you guys, I mean, I've seen you guys shaking your head. Can you comment on it?
Yeah. I don't cover strawberries.
Oh, we need to use the microphone.
Sorry.
State your name, please.
I'm Devin Christensen, law enforcement in the Western region. Strawberries in the central region, we don't have any trouble over the last 3 years.
Is there a way you can look up stats on FAPOT? Okay, yeah, maybe we'll just give you a few minutes to look and see if you can narrow it down. Okay, great.
Any other comments from the rack?
You might want to tell them what FAPOT is.
Do we want to know?
I guess my comment would just be that we try to, I like simple things, you know, and if it's statewide, it seems like it just makes more sense to have it be statewide and make it more simple so people don't get in trouble unknowingly and just keep it simple like that. So I'd propose to give
a motion. Yeah, we can deal with a motion unless we want to wait for FAPOT.
FAPOT?
Yeah. Well, yeah, let me clarify. FAPOT is a computer-based system that's kind of like a database that our law enforcement section uses. How they come up with the name FAPOT, I don't know. But it's a good program. It basically allows them to do everything through the computer, issuing citations, do warrant checks, everything in that one software program. A great program.
No pressure.
I'm not going to put you on the spot. I think regardless, I'd just make a motion that we accept the division's recommendations as proposed with the exception of the strawberry. And I don't even know how to state this, but keep the regulations statewide with the two-day limit, including strawberry.
Second that as well.
Okay, so motion by Bryce and second by Craig. And the motion is to accept the division proposal as presented with the exception of allowing a two-day possession on strawberry.
Yes.
Any discussion on the motion?
Yeah.
Okay, Kevin.
My take on it is that's what these guys do for a living. They manage the waters and they try and manage the public and the relationship of the public with the resources. And I am concerned. By accepting that addition to the motion, that we're kind of taking away the opportunity for DNR to try and bring this other group of people along. I mean, we can make the recommendation, certainly, and the board decides whether to accept it or not. But I just am a little concerned that, you know, being in law enforcement for as long as I was, that sometimes you just have a group of people that, in any given situation, that if you can just bring them along, things are better instead of the battle. So that's just my comment.
Thank you. Any other comments? Chris.
Perhaps this is for you, Randy. I don't quite have a grasp on what the objections are to Strawberry being a two-day possession limit. But you did say that even if people do, you know, do a catch and keep instead of catch and release, you don't anticipate a big effect on the fishery.
Yeah, and that's really primarily because of that.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comments on the motion? Okay. Seeing none, are we ready for the question? So the motion on the table is to accept the division proposal as presented, with the exception of allowing a two-day possession on Strawberry. All those in favor indicate by saying aye and raise your hand. Five opposed. 5-4, the motion carries. Hey, thank you for your comments and presentation. Oh, thank you, Craig. We do need for the record a comment from those of you that oppose the motion to go into the minutes for the Wildlife Board. So we'll start, Kevin.
My reason is just as I'd stated. I think that they could work through it and maybe make it smoother.
Okay. Thank you. Matt?
My rationale is similar to Kevin's in that I support the proposed regulations as are and the commitment by DWR to work with the constituents down there trying to find a resolution over the next year.
Good. Russ?
Well, I agree with Kevin as well and the comments he made. And although I do agree that we need to be consistent across the board, but I do agree with Kevin.
John?
Yeah, I just feel the legwork that they're doing. If it's only 6 months to even a year for a fishery that's don't look like it would harm it either way, I just feel that they should carry on that. You know, that's a small window.
Great. Okay, thank you.
How do we go about asking the division to address this guy's comments about the catfish maybe at the next?
We can have you bring that comment up to the Wildlife Board at the next Wildlife Board meeting when you address this particular agenda item.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, and I would also add that Paul Thompson and Chris Penny here in the audience have heard that and maybe could lay out what their thoughts are for the future.
Sample of those, we use those to study the pH of the ocean.
what we did find is it takes about 8 years to produce a 20-inch catfish, about 10 to 12 to produce a 24-inch catfish. We don't have a whole lot of data on how the reservoir other than that, but what's kind of clear to us from what we discovered is that's a long time to produce those catfish. We don't have enough data to tell if the increased pressure that guys are on top of the reservoir would lead to overfishing. But given how long it takes to grow those fish, we think it's concerning. One of the things that we discussed internally with this division is taking it concerning. They've been looking at this on a more statewide level. That fish fishing appears to be growing in popularity and maybe we're concerned those covers. These fish within the park limit is fairly liberal. And this is something that we have to have on a radar.
Great, thank you. Okay, the next order of business is an informational-only item, and so we're going to hear from Ben Lauder, who's going to talk on some archery hunt strategy proposals.
Thank you. My name is Ben Lauder. I'm Vice President of the Utah Bowman's Association. A quick thank you to the Division of Wildlife Resources and the RAC for letting me present this tonight. I'm here tonight to present an idea, a proposal for a once-in-a-lifetime archery-only hunting opportunity. For a little bit of background, where this proposal is coming from, I've over the last several years, I've been asked numerous times by my membership and other fellow bow hunters, why do we not have an archery-only opportunity for once-in-a-lifetime species here in the state of Utah, similar to what we would have for deer and elk and so forth. To be completely honest with you, I have never had probably a sufficient answer. So earlier this year, my board of directors tasked me to creating a committee to investigate the possibility for that type of an option. And so we did so. Through the last couple of months, we've had multiple meetings amongst ourselves. We've met with the Division of Wildlife Resources, with some of the leadership, as well as biologists and big game managers. And through those conversations, this is what we come up with. So the purpose of this is to provide an archery-only hunt experience for a once-in-a-lifetime species. So how would this look? A couple of things I want to point off right off the bat. What this isn't a new hunt. This isn't new tags. Rather, we're proposing that when somebody draws a once-in-a-lifetime permit, that they're given two options. Option one is status quo, wouldn't need to do anything, continue to hunt the current season as they exist today with their choice of weapon, could be rifle, muzzleloader, bow, so forth. And option two is an option to exchange your tag for an archery-only permit with new season dates and to give up the option to hunt during the current season dates and with a firearm. So what would those season dates look like? I'll go through them here one at a time. But in summary first, the season dates that we have, as we've talked to the biologists and the big game managers, that we've come up with are, in some instances, a season before the current season dates, in others, a season after the current season dates, and in some instances, both, a combination of the two. So as we go through these individually, you'll see on Moose, we are recommending a 7-day archery only season prior to the current season, as well as a 21-day season afterwards. On bison, a 21-day archery only season prior to current any weapon season. mountain goats, a combination, a 10-day season prior to the current season, 7-day season after, and you'll notice 14 days coinciding, and I'll explain that a little bit more on the next slide, why we would coincide that season. And then on desert and Rocky Mountain bighorn sheep, we're proposing a 21-day archery in the season after the current season. Okay, so if we were to apply these season dates to this year, I wanted to do this to really kind of show exactly what we're talking about here and put some hard dates on the ground. So if this were implemented for this year, you'll see on Moose, we'd be recommending 7-day preseason, which those dates would be September 10th through the 16th, as well as a postseason, 21 days after the current season, October 21st, November 10th. The reason for the split season here is we want to be sensitive to those people that draw that tag that aren't interested in the archery, in an archery hunt. We don't want to be putting bow hunters in for too long prior to their hunt and have them feel like they're getting an unfair advantage. And then after the season, we found that most of people really don't care about those days, so that's why I added the additional time there after. The reason we didn't go completely after is because moose actually shed their antlers very early in November. Even at November 10th, we could be getting an instance where a couple of moose has actually already shed their antlers. On bison, you'll notice on Antelope Island, we're seeking no change there. It's kind of a special scenario. So really that leaves the Henry Mountains and the Book Cliffs. And you'll notice there's a number of different seasons on both of those units that run clear into December and January. And so a season after the current season doesn't really make sense, and therefore we're asking or recommending a October 1st to the 21st season, or during the season, which would be prior to the current seasons. And the other thing I want to point out is those season dates would not overlap the current limited entry rifle deer hunts on both of those units. We want to make sure that we're sensitive to those hunts, so we don't interfere with those hunts. Now, moving on to Rocky Mountain goats, we're recommending 10 days prior, and then 7 days after, and the 14 days coinciding. What I want to point out here is on those 14 days, the last 14 days coinciding with the current hunt, you'll notice the end dates on the right-hand side of that current hunt dates, so they vary from unit to unit. And the reason for that, as I've talked to Justin Shannon about that, is various units have different closures, seasonal closures on the roads from the Forest Service. And so we want to be sensitive to not putting the hunt out there when access may be extremely limited or non-existent. So we are still recommending 7 days after, with the acknowledgement that access could be very limited during the 7 days. Moving on to desert bighorn sheep and Rocky Mountain bighorn sheep, we're recommending simply a post-season, post-archery during the season, for 21 days. Those season dates on desert bighorn sheep, November 10th through the 30th. And then it looks like we failed to put the actual dates, but we're on the Rocky Mountains. We're looking for December 1 through December 21. So, what are the benefits for this proposal? This would provide an archery only hunt experience for those who desire that for once in a lifetime species. Now, why would somebody desire that experience? I've had this question. The reason for that is this type of an opportunity would allow a bow hunter to be out in the field and to be able to select a particular animal to chase and to be able to do so without the thought or the concern of somebody else coming in, you know, potentially without them even knowing that they're there, hunting the same animal with a firearm and essentially shooting over the top and, you know, with a bow. Stocks are generally different, you know, they can take much longer, it's obviously a closer range weapon, and so there's some concern there. There's another benefit, potentially fewer hunters during the current season. The more hunters that would take this opportunity would obviously reduce the number of hunters in the field during that current season. So that could be a benefit for those who don't take this opportunity. And then also, and this is really kind of keeping me, current draw process and draws are not affected by this. Anywhere at all. Many hunts and tags, that's not affected. This isn't a method for the bow hunter to get in line and get a tag earlier with this this proposal that's not even an option. So a couple of discussion items on this. We've been made aware that this top one is really probably the most specific for the bighorn sheep, both the Rockies and the deserts. The Division of Wildlife Resources conducts their area surveys typically very shortly thereafter the current season. So we acknowledge that they could be flying during those times. And we would just ask if when somebody were to take advantage of this opportunity on a sheep tag, that they'd be made aware simply that there is a good chance that they may be flown over from the division is going to be doing aerial surveys during their hunt. And they just need to be made aware of that and be okay with that, accept that. Same thing with the Forest Service road closures. That's more specific to the mountain goats. As I alluded to earlier, and again, those hunters just need to be made aware if they're going to hunt that way, receive an access could be an issue. There's currently some interstate hunt agreements, specifically on the Pilot Mountain sheep unit, and so we don't want to mess with that. We need to close jumps there. Again, on the Henrys and the Brookcliffs, right, the deer hunts, we don't want to interfere with those, and so our proposal on the Buffalo is to put that hunt before that deer hunt in October. It would overlap the general season outcome. I don't see any issues there. We just want to make sure we avoid that limit of entry here. And then, obviously, when you're hunting with bow, the overall success rate could look down. And that could become a, you know, where do we go with that? Potentially, we could, you know, over time, offer more tags. And as we all know, bonus points and bonus kind of proof is. It's a big issue, and so I think that's a big difference. So there's more people take advantage of an opportunity such as this. That's everything that I've got for the proposal. Thank you for listening. Mr. Chairman, this is an informational item. That said, I would love some feedback. I'd be happy to entertain questions, hear feedback from the RAC, and if possible, the public, if there's anybody who would like to comment as well.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any questions or comments regarding the proposal, either from the RAC or the public?
What a comment.
Justin.
I was impressed that with the thought and the amount of work they put into it. I didn't see the effect. And the first thing I thought when I heard this was what you mentioned. Is this a way for an archery guy to get – I am an archery guy, but for an archery guy to get in line and get another tag, which wouldn't go over well. I thought there was a lot of thought that you went into it. I know it's always an uphill battle when you start to mess with dates and different things, but I was impressed and would hope that the division looks at it and put some thought into it. I think there's a benefit to it. And again, I am a little bit biased towards archery. I will admit that.
Yeah, thank you. And again, that's kind of part of the intent here is to not alter that current draw process.
Any other questions, comments? Matt.
So have you done surveys to get an idea of how many archers would potentially be interested in this? Is it going to be 5%, 10% of the tags?
No, that's a great question. We haven't done any surveys. We have presented this idea to our board of directors. Our board of directors is primarily made up of representatives from every club from around the state. We did get an element of unanimous approval from our board of directors to present this, and so we feel like we have pretty good representation of owners throughout the state for our federal organization. As far as the number of people that would be interested in this opportunity, you know, I can see it varying from year to year. There could be years where there might be very few, and I could see some species having none, to be honest with you. And I think it'll vary from species to species as well. I, in my opinion, with the way that our proposal currently exists, I see moose and bison being species that could be very interesting. Sheep could also be interesting. So yeah, I don't know. You know what, until we actually do it, I think that's going to be how we find out.
Okay.
And so kind of a follow-up question to that, how are we going to deal with those people that do the, you know, they waited 16, 17 years to draw a tag, they did that early season, didn't get one, now they want to be able to use their rifle like they could before if they had kept the original tag.
So our proposal is this is an option, and if you choose to take this option, you are exchanging your tag, we're not doing the tag, so that current season if you're in the weapon, in the choice of any weapon, there's no longer an option for that hunter.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a neat idea as long as that's clear to the people that are choosing that. I foresee that being an issue, potential issue coming up.
Okay, Kevin?
My question would be, where do you see this stop? It's certainly not going to stop with the archery people. Next one, it will be muzzleloaders. So that's my big question. And to extend the dates as much as I see them extended without studying it, the number of days to be able to hunt, I think you're stepping into a lot of opposition from other groups that are going to want the same thing. Not that I don't like the idea. It just, I think we're stepping into a mud puddle if we don't really clear this up.
Craig?
Yeah, I have a comment. I'm not necessarily against this, but one concern I've had for a long time is the pressure that wildlife have and how long that pressure lasts. I mean, if you're hunting deer or elk or moose or grouse, you're pushing all these animals around, and it starts in August and goes into January with some hunts, and I just I think that's something that has to be looked at too. And this is how many hunter days, how many times, how much people are going to be out affecting the wildlife and pushing them around, and that's just that's something that I think needs to be a part of this discussion and looked at in the management of wildlife.
So I'd like to address that real quick. I'm not a biologist, but I talked to biologists about that very issue. The response that I've received from biologists concerning that is these animals are, these are a prey animal. They're always being hunted, whether it's by us or by mountain lions or coyotes or bears, right? And so, you know, running from the predator is just, they're doing it every day. And the impression I got from the biologists is the time that we spend in the field in the fall really is not an issue concerning that. I would go ahead and add my own personal experience to that. Like I said, I've heard this comment several times. My own personal experience, both that I do represent a bowhunting organization. In addition to that, I do hunt with the most litter rifle as well. But I prefer well-rounded victim hunting. And on general season units here in Utah, my observations have been opening weekends with very, very heavy pressure. By the time Monday rolls around, the pressure's gone. And so you're right, our seasons do go for that long, but to be completely honest, the animals are seeing pressure for a couple of days, and then it lets off for a considerable amount of time before it starts up again. That's my personal observation.
I just think it needs to be studied.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, thank you very much for your presentation. So I want to remind everyone that the next meeting for the RAC will be on November 9th, and it will be in this room as well. So mark that on your calendar. If there is no further business and there is no objection, I'd like to adjourn the meeting. Seeing no objection, the meeting is adjourned.